Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are keeping calm. We're staying local. We're going to be hyper-local right now, just like our newest sponsor at Taharka Ice Cream. This is an empty Honey Graham Taharka Ice Cream made here in Baltimore. Don Moeller apparently has a full one now in his freezer over in Catonsville.
It's not full anymore.
What's that? It's not full anymore.
The Honey Graham is no longer full.
Okay. Oh, well, this is an update. I'm sure the Wake and Bake will be next and the Caramel Crunch. It'll all be out. I'm going to get over to State Fair because you put those wings up on Memorial Day, and I needed to get over there and have it, and my wife wants some crushes to go. So we got to get over to State Fair and be a part of that.
I can't wait. I mean, you know, so many of our sponsors, you know, really good folks. I'm heading down, actually, in a little while, Nestor, to pick up food from Fadley's that they're donating to the St. Agnes healthcare workers. I mean, they're doing great things and, you know, really good things taking place out there. And we just ask everybody to support our sponsors and the small businesses in their area.
Don't forget Moeller and Gary Realty, still closing deals from 6 feet away or even closer on the interweb, showing, listing, buying, selling, and getting deals done this summer. Speaking of getting deals done, we're getting up on the election. This might be our final actual candidate coming up that we're going to have on. You can find all of the primary mayor candidates. We did not have all 20-some-odd on, but all of the primary ones, except for Jack Young, joined us in recent days, but everybody was invited. We've also had on various folks who are running for the city council president. You can find Shannon Sneed as well as Carl Stokes up in the buyatoyota.com audio vault, as well as our repository at Baltimore Positive as we've merged the brands here. And Don, in my hands, I am holding the actual, this is the real deal here. This is my election ballot with my numbering on it and all my codes and fun stuff, and it all came in the mail the other day. It's real and it's here. We built Baltimore Positive for this, didn't we?
It's here. As we say, democracy is not a spectator sport. We want everyone to vote. We're delighted that we have a candidate for controller with us this morning in Bill Henry. We want to get an update on that race. We're getting close. Everybody get those ballots in the mail. So, Nestor, I know this is a race that has really interested you.
Well, it has. And, you know, Bill, I've been fascinated by all that I learned the day that you came over. But first of all, great to have you back on. I went back and I rewatched our work and I reshared it over the weekend. And I actually, you know, being critical of myself and even more critical of Don, and just going back through the conversation and having chicken and waffles that day. I had just gotten off a plane from some godfather, I don't even know where I was, and landed down with you. And we got to talking about where the money is going for the city and what it's being spent on. And now every time Jack speaks to the orange TV con man that landed in our incredible historic spot down at the edge of the water over the weekend, $20 million a month, shortfalls, where's the money going? The hotel that I live attached to is closed down. There's no revenue coming from there. I walk through the city. There's no revenue. I look out the window. There's no baseball revenue. You are the guy talking about these issues before these were even larger issues than they were. I would think that conversation we had over chicken and waffles at State Fair a couple, 4 or 5 months ago has become an even more urgent thing. And you, being someone who thinks you're going to win this week, I would think you better have a plan for this, pal. Because there was no pandemic handbook that they handed out to you on the way out of State Fair a couple months ago, right?
No, there wasn't. Well, first of all, thank you, both of you, Nestor, Don, for bringing me back on. I always appreciate the chance to talk to people about how city government should be working. We've got a huge challenge in front of us, financially, unprecedented. They've got economists saying that the long-term effects of this, could easily be worse than the Great Depression. We're going to need to do some real partnerships at the state and federal level. It'd be nice if we had a federal partner again. But at the local level, in terms of taking care of ourselves, we're going to have to make certain that there is absolutely no waste, no inefficiency in what city government is doing. And that's why it's more important than ever that we have a fiscal watchdog up there, sitting on the Board of Estimates, keeping an eye on what should be $500 million worth of of spending going through that board every year. We'll see whether
half a billion. Say that out loud again. Half a billion, correct?
Half a billion dollars every year. The Board of Estimates approves $500 million or more of spending, of contracts, procurement.
So this election, this I'm holding the phone. I just want to make this really clear to everybody listening that I'm holding this up. These two people here, the only two people running from controller. We have one of them on the line. A half a billion dollars a year. So it's not really that. It's that times four. So it's $2 billion that you
term,
or Joan Pratt will. Now, again, for everyone out there, reiterate the uniqueness of the power of the mayor. And I want to hold the mayor candidates up because that's a little bit of a longer list here. That one of these people will be the mayor. Give everyone the structure of this bill, because when I go out in Canton and I talk to folks and I, you know, go out in Federal Hill or up Mount Washington or go west or go east and talk to folks anywhere in the city about how the city is run, I have been shocked over the last, let's say, 18 months, 2 years, that at how much I've learned about my own city. And again, I didn't move here looking to learn city government. I moved here to walk the baseball games and, you know, have fun and enjoy my life, right? 17 years later, when I went to sell my place, as you well know, the last 2 years have been an education in the Constitution, the Second Amendment, all sorts of amendments, you know. So I think I've learned a lot about government over the last 18 months, but the most amazing part of this is just how unique Baltimore is. And Don, you and I talked to Ron Cassie, and anybody goes out and buys the Baltimore magazine this month about how to fix Baltimore, just what a unique government structure and space and time and the 1948 election, all these things that have made us what we are, that have made it more challenging on us as a municipality, but more than that, where the money goes, because there is a finite amount of money, and there's really a very, very small, powerful structure on where all that money goes, right?
Yeah, so there's two key parts there. One is Baltimore City just flatly has the strongest mayor in terms of strong mayor systems in the United States. And almost nobody goes to school to learn how their city government works. When you're in middle school or high school and you're learning how government works, you learn how government works at the federal level. And you learn about checks and balances. And everybody just tends to assume that, oh, the state and the local governments just work the same way, just at a smaller level. The city council is like Congress. The mayor is like the president. But the reality is, in Baltimore City, we don't have nearly the same checks and balances between the powers of the mayor and the powers of the city council that we have on the federal level.
Does that date back to Mayor Schaefer, or is it even further back than that? To go back to DeLisandro, like when did the locus of control for the mayor become such a powerful thing in Baltimore?
It actually is kind of funny. I just heard this story a couple months ago from a guy named Matt Crenson. Matt's a professor, or retired professor at Johns Hopkins University. And we were both on a panel at University of Baltimore Law School talking about charter reform. And Matt told this story about how back in the late 1800s, there was a period where the city council was full of, you know, people who'd been there for a long time, and they were very stick in the mud-ish, and they were there was a progressive backlash where a really progressive Republican mayor came in and convinced the people of Baltimore to change the charter to take power away from the Democratic conservative council and give it to the mayor, so that the mayor could enact all these reforms that the people wanted but that the city council wasn't doing. And so it's been about 120 years now.
And Baltimore was a really powerful city at that point. Baltimore was probably a top five city in America at that time, right?
Yeah. And here's the other big difference that people don't realize, because everybody here just takes it for granted, is Baltimore City isn't in a county.
Right.
And Baltimore City has to both do the work of a city and the work of a county. That when I was in college, there were only six major cities left in America in that situation. 30 years later, there's just two. It's just us in St. Louis, and out in Missouri, they're trying to pull St. Louis into the county that surrounds it. It's really hard for city governments to do the work of a city with just the tax base of the municipality. And that's one of our challenges.
No, I was going to say, I apologize for cutting you off. As Nestor indicated, we did just have, Nestor, an hour or more conversation with Ron Cassie from Baltimore Magazine. We encourage folks to go back and listen to that interview. He wrote about the history of that, and clearly in his article, How to Fix Baltimore, he knows how politically difficult it is, but he makes the same observation that you do, that without combining Baltimore City with Baltimore County or maybe parts of it with Anne Arundel, it is very, very difficult for the city to manage its finances. So it's interesting that you bring that up. But talking about finances, I don't want us to gloss over, because you and Nestor were chatting about where we are now as a city and where we're going to be. You more than anyone, given the fact that you've steeped yourself getting ready in information, getting ready to be the comptroller should you be elected in a few weeks, understand where we're heading. This is not what folks might think of as just a little blip on the radar screen, a little dip in revenues. This is truly a crisis, as you indicated, perhaps as serious as the one we faced in the Depression, particularly in terms not only of small business and businesses, but for the city itself. Now, Bill, if you win, that's going to be on your plate. Give us some thoughts about how the city's going to manage and dig out of this thing over the next couple of years.
Well, we're going to have to take a different attitude towards how we approach city services. One of the things that I've already been pushing for, and I've been helping groups push for at the state level as well, is to try to get government to not contract in terms of reducing headcount. There's always a very strong temptation in times like this to say, well, just, you know, government just got to cut costs.
That should not mean people.
But that's the thing, is the first thing on the chopping block is so often how can we reduce headcount? How can we cut people from this? And we can't give in to that temptation, because the people are
they are the service.
Those are our neighbors. Those are our neighbors.
Well, let me push back, and I'm going to break my rule, and I want you to. I'm going to break what we try. We're trying to get better on not interrupting. We still have a way to go, but I want to push back to both you and Nestor on that point. And I get it, and I appreciate the sentiment. But Bill, as you know, in pretty much every government across the nation, 75% to 80% of the cost of running government are in salaries and benefits and fixed costs. So it's hard to find the money when you take people off the table. So having said that, now pick up and talk about how you think you're going to try to do that.
Well, the other part of this is we're going to have to do some serious, serious advocacy when it comes to reaching out to the federal partners we should have in this crisis. One of the things that the state and the individual subdivisions have in common that is different from the federal government, we all are required by our various charters or constitutions, we're all required to have balanced budgets every year. And as Don's pointing out, and as Don's lived with himself, you know, every year you got to figure out how to make everything come out even right then and there. The federal government is the only government in the United States of America that doesn't have that constraint. And in a time like this, of an unprecedented economic crisis, we're going to need the federal government to figure out how do we help out at the state and local level the same way that they, I mean, they just spent billions of dollars bailing out the airline industry. Now, I'm not going to say that that didn't need to be done, because there are hundreds of thousands of people working for the airline industry, and I don't want them going hungry or being homeless. But we can't think that we can do those types of bailouts for individual industries and not also figure out how we're going to help take care of localities all around this country.
Bill, I'm sorry.
That kind of challenge is going to need advocacy. We're going to have Baltimore City working together with Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, Howard County. All of the counties are going to have to get together and go as states to Washington to make sure that Congress and what passes for the president understand that this needs to be done.
Bill Henry is our guest. He is running for controller. I have my ballot out. There are only two candidates for controller, Bill Henry and Joan Pratt. You know, we got together last time. We talked so much about audits and where's the money going and who's making deals. And obviously your opponent is, there's all sorts of things that can be read about that and how long she's at her job and how this campaign has gone. But the brass tacks of actually getting down to do this, either you or her, and how it will be done and what's been done in the past versus the future. What would you do differently? How does she do it? Because there is a track record. And how do you plan to do it differently?
So the easiest answer to that is she doesn't seem to ever have any kind of plan. She stresses the importance of being a CPA. She stresses the importance of her ability to make sure that the numbers add up, which is great, you know, and as the comptroller, I look forward to hiring a number of CPAs or keeping the ones that we already have. But the comptroller themselves doesn't need to be a CPA. The comptroller needs to be somebody who understands the big picture and understands what those numbers mean relative to the others. I have shown myself over 12 years in the city council to be an idea generator. Not all the ideas are ones that everybody wants to get behind, but enough of them have been ideas that we have pulled together and moved forward with. I feel confident in my ability to work with whoever we elect as our next mayor, whoever we elect as our next council president, and the members of the council. I want to work with them collaboratively to come up with how we get out of this situation. Now, it's not going to be something where I can sit here and tell you, boom, 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 we do these three things and we're going to be right as rain. It's going to be nuanced. It's going to be in the weeds. It's going to be in the details. But I'm willing to go there and figure that out and make that work. And I've seen and heard nothing from the current comptroller in 25 years to make me believe that she would rather be spending time working with the rest of us to figure out solutions. I heard from some of my colleagues after I announced that I was running for this and I was looking for their support. Some of my colleagues reached out to me last summer and last fall and said the comptroller called them for the first time since they'd been on the council once she heard that she was going to have to be actually in an election. It's not her thing to work collaboratively with others, and that's what I'm all about.
Well, Bill, I want to continue talking about the race. You've talked about, I would couch them as competency issues and what the comptroller ought to be focusing on. But I really want to cut to the chase and ask you if in your election, as in perhaps the mayoral election, is integrity on the ballot for city voters in a few days on June the 2nd when they go to the polls? Will folks be voting on integrity?
Integrity is always an issue. Character is always an issue. Anybody who tells you otherwise is what's the expression? Anyone who tries to tell you otherwise is trying to sell something. At the end of the day, when you're choosing leaders, you're looking for competence, you're looking for vision, But if you can't believe what they're telling you, then how can you trust either the experience or the vision? You have to be able to believe that this is somebody who is going to be straight with me. This is somebody who's going to tell me what I need to know so that I can make an informed decision, because that's the whole point of democracy, is that it's the people who are really the power behind government. And I believe that fully and 100%. I have spent the 12 years on the council trying to educate my district to what is going on inside city government, and I'd like to expand that and spread that to all 14 districts. I want to make sure Baltimoreans are informed. I want people to know how the city is spending their money, because I think if everybody knows how the city is spending their money, the city will spend it better.
Do you even know how we're spending the money? I often wonder, because as citizens, I really wonder how many people understand this and even understand, as we talked about in the beginning here, and you talked about term limits was, you know, the last time we got together, that was the beginning of our conversation. I think I was having chicken and waffle and you were having term limits and ice water over at State Fair. But understanding what happens here this week when I fill this ballot out, right? That whether it's Jack or Sheila or Brandon or TJ or whomever it is, Mary, Theroux, whoever it is, right? And we've had them all on. That person, and let's say you win, all right? Good fortune shines your way. You're the winner. There's a new mayor. Or there will be a new mayor either way, because Jack would still be a new mayor because he'd be voted on for the first time, right? Getting in a room together and figuring out who makes these decisions and how this goes, all I've heard are the councilmen, and you being one in the 4th District up north, talk about councilmen feel a little powerless to some degree in regard to money and budgets and where these things go. And I don't think that would change unless the real structure changed. And I know there's some mayoral candidates who would like to take a lot of the power away from the mayor and have a city manager, administrators, all of that sort of stuff. But for where we are right now in a pandemic, you might win. You might win again in November. Then next December 8th or whatever that day is, there's a new mayor and it's you and a new mayor and new council members, new city council president as well. So y'all sit in a room together. How does this work for a citizen? Like, what will the push and pull be if you're in the room and you've got your finger on that $500 million? What are the things that are important to you about how that money is spent?
Well, the first thing I want to tell you is that what you just described would be different, because that does not happen now. Right now, the mayor...
That's discouraging, by the way. It's a guy that pays taxes here.
The mayor and the city council sit down in a room roughly once a month. The council has a working lunch on the day that it has its council meetings. And that lunch... the mayor and the council president take turns hosting it. And so every other council meeting, or roughly every 4 weeks, every month, the council has lunch with the mayor. I've been going to those lunches for 12 years, and I spent 6 years working for the council president.
But that's 144 lunches you've had. Okay, so I'm just... just give... That's 144 lunches. Okay, so what do you glean from these trips downtown?
What I glean from that is that I've never seen the comptroller there. Wow. And only on a couple occasions have I seen members of her staff come to represent her. I would look forward to the opportunity to sit down with the rest of... I would still consider the city council to be my colleagues as comptroller, because we're all in this together in terms of trying to get the city on the right path. The things that I would like to do, I've been very upfront about wanting to see a more even power dynamic between the council and the mayor. I'd like the city council to have a greater say in budgeting. Right now, when it comes to the budget, the mayor sends us a budget. The mayor sends the city council a budget, and then the city council can only cut from it. The city council can't add to it. So if the mayor sends a budget and the city that involves cutting rec centers, the city council legally cannot add money back in to refund those rec centers, even if it cuts money away from other things to pay for it. It can't do that. The only way for that to happen is the council has to convince the mayor to change their mind and put the money back in.
So the mayor has 14, of you, right, and the city council president as well as the comptroller to hear and then decree to some degree, right?
That's right. And that same inequity happens at the Board of Estimates, where we approve all the contracts and all the procurement. That $500 million worth of spending gets approved by a 5-member body, and of the 5 members of that board, the mayor, the council president, the comptroller, but then the city solicitor and the director of public works are 2 members of that board who work for the mayor. They're appointed by the mayor. They can be fired by the mayor at any time. Unsurprisingly, they always vote the way the mayor wants them to vote.
Magic
doctor.
which means that the mayor doesn't lose any votes at the Board of Estimates. One of the things that Joan Pratt has bragged about is that she brags that she's never voted for a water rate increase, when the truth of the matter is her vote against the water rate increase has never mattered, because the rates will go up anyway, because the mayor and the mayor's 2 votes will vote for them. It's not enough to just vote against the mayor. You got to come to the people of Baltimore and you got to make your case for why the mayor's agenda isn't a good thing for Baltimore, because the only thing right now, unless we change the structure, the only way you influence the mayor of Baltimore's policy is by showing them that that policy is out of line with what the people really want. And that involves educating the people to make sure they understand what's actually happening. And there just isn't enough public education going on in the city when it comes to how government works.
Well, Bill, talking about educating the people and getting the people involved and getting them to a point of advocacy, you're a smart guy. You've got a good campaign team. I know that talk to a number of the campaign folks for this upcoming election. They all have models. What I was shocked when I looked back at your, 2016 election, and you got almost 17,000 votes. When I looked at that, I thought, wow, the person who wins mayor this time may not have a whole lot more than what Bill got in the first district. I mean, I actually did a double take this morning before we came on. I thought, wow, Bill got as many votes in the fourth district that might go to whoever wins this mayoral election. Now you've looked at this thing, we're in the home stretch, we've got the pedal to the metal. What is your sense of how many people, given that we're in this vote by mail, uncharted territory, how many people are going to send in ballots, Bill, if you had to guess?
As of last Thursday, the last one we have is Thursday. As of last Thursday, 21,000 people had already voted.
Okay, so that's, we got 300,000.
I would say that's 15%. Of what will vote. I think 140,000 will vote, right? Ish?
Well, so here's the thing. We were definitely expecting a big turnout back when we were talking about an in-person election.
And the presidential primary, right?
And a presidential. So 2 things have happened in the last 3 months. One being the pandemic changing the election, the election from an in-person to a mail-in. And so we have no models to predict, because Maryland has never had a real mail-in election before. But the other thing that changed is the presidential primaries have fizzled away in this time. So there is now, we no longer have multiple presidential candidates all trying to turn out their voters. which was a big part of the expectation for the big turnout for the election.
So you keep using the word turnout, 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 like crossing the street to vote for Stephanie Rawlings Blake a decade ago, maybe, maybe not, standing in line, whatever. When it comes to your mailbox, there's no more turnout, right? Like, it takes 30 seconds, you color it, you sign it, you send it back. I think that's such a weird wild card, Bill, right? Because there have been times where I am the world's voter, and taking my 95-year-old mother to vote took half my day, you know what I mean? And thinking, does it matter? Does Hillary really need my whatever or whatever it's been in the past, right? This is different when it comes to your mailbox. I really do. I think it's almost like going to Preakness where people bet on horses and don't know horses. I think there are going to be people, you know, coloring these things in just because it came to the house and they don't have to turn out, you know?
Listen, Nestor, I hope you're right. I mean, that's definitely one possibility, is that it will create an uptick in turnout. That would be great. The more participation, the better. The concerns that we have had have been related to the fact that younger voters just don't engage with snail mail the same way older voters do.
If they could vote online, they're in.
they do so much of their, a lot of the everyday things that people use mail for, you know, sending letters to people, paying bills, receiving checks. There is a whole segment of the population who now very consciously and actively does all of that activity online. And so they just don't use postage the way that older voters do. And so we're waiting to see, will that affect turnout, or can we sufficiently get the word out that, yeah, go digging through all that stuff that you think of as junk mail and pull out this, because this is your voice in how city government is going to work for the next 4 years. I've always been a big fan of vote by mail in concept. I've always thought it would be a good idea to move us here. I just had expected to move us here with a better plan and more organization. There was a pretty good public education campaign in place to get people to fill out their census. I had expected and hoped that if Maryland ever moved to mail-in elections, we would have that same level of education campaign. In states that regularly do mail-in elections, you usually have about a month from when you receive the ballot to when they have to be back by. We have people who still haven't received their ballots yet, and they're due back a week from today.
How widespread is that? Bill, you said we're about a week out as we take this. How widespread is it that folks have not received ballots?
I couldn't tell you, because if the Board of Elections knows, they haven't released that information. I can only go by anecdotal. I still see people complaining on social media. I get individual complaints, emails, and phone calls from people who say, listen, the election's in 8 days or 9 days, and I still haven't gotten a ballot yet. What should I do? By the way, if we've got a second, we should tell people that if they haven't received their ballot yet, they can go online and they can order a ballot by email, in which case the Board of Elections will email you a ballot. You print it out, you fill it out, you mail it back. The one thing you need to know is that if you ask the Board of Elections for that, for them to email you a ballot, and then your regular ballot shows up in the mail, you cannot use your regular ballot. And then, of course, the last option is there will be in-person voting centers. I believe 6 of them scattered throughout the city, where if you still haven't received a ballot by next Tuesday, you can go and vote in person.
Yeah, Bill, to your point, Nestor and I did a lengthy interview with Nikki Charlson, Deputy Administrator for the Maryland Board of Elections, again, available on BaltimorePositive.com. I would encourage everyone listening to go back and listen to that interview with Nikki. She really does walk through all the steps available
Great.
To citizens, from when they get their ballot to if they have a problem with the ballot. She also promotes a public service video that's outstanding, that's on the Maryland Board of Elections website, that folks can go and see. So, it is indeed an experiment. Nikki pointed out for us, Bill, that in the 7th, if you take that as one example, that in the previous special election that we had conducted in the state of Maryland, 8% of the people, only 8% voted. When all of the votes were tallied in the 7th for that special election back in April, 32% actually voted. So they were heartened by that, whether that transfers or not to the mayoral election. We shall see. Won't ask you to endorse. I'm sure you're fond of a number of the candidates for mayor. Is your sense, as you get out and about, that the mayoral race with roughly a week to go is still anybody's race to win?
Well, in all candor, it's not anybody's, but it's still well within the reach of at least three of the major candidates. I think at this point, it's the last poll that came out from The Sun made it clear that there is a top tier of candidates, and then a second tier of candidates, and then there's everybody else. That same situation is going on over in the council president's race. There's a top three set of candidates, and then there's everybody else. And then my race is a statistical tie. Right now, I will say this, when we were talking earlier, you mentioned that as many votes as I got for city council back in 2016, that might be all you need to win the mayor's race. I will say that one of the things we have joked about for months now, knowing the size of the fields, is that whoever loses my race will probably get more votes than whoever wins the mayor's race.
Probably double, Bill.
In terms of the fact that I am in, I'm in the simplest race. I don't mean the easiest, but I mean the most straightforward. It's just a simple choice. You can choose the person who's been there for 25 years. If you're happy and comfortable with how city government has been running for the last 25 years, and you don't think we need to do anything different, you don't want to make any changes, you don't want to see Baltimore moving forward or better, you can just keep voting for the person who's been there through six mayors and five council presidents. But if you want to see change, if you want to see city government be more open, more transparent, more accountable, then you have that option to vote Bill Henry for comptroller.
Well, Bill, I'll send everybody back out to our Baltimore Positive, and I've shared it a couple times, because people say, well, who the hell's Bill Henry? I don't know. Yeah, what district's that? North Baltimore? But for everybody out there, if you want to get to know Bill, his family background, and all of your urge to do this, and I, as a resident, as a taxpayer, I tip my cap to you, and I filled my ballot out how we're on it, because I have one of those red, green, blue, black pens that we had in high school, Bill. I don't know if you had these at Loyola, but we didn't Dundalk back in 82 when Don Moeller taught me guidance counseling. And I filled out my ballot, and I've selected you. I haven't figured out who I'm voting for mayor yet, literally. And my wife and I have been talking about it all day, as well as city council president. But I have circled in my ballot. I wonder if it was number two pencil or not, just the way Don used to tell me on the Iowa test. But I did it in pen. And I also voted for Eric Costello. You can let him know, because he's unopposed, and Eric does a great job. He's a good man. So I don't want to let him know that I didn't vote for him. So,
well,
so there
Eric,
you have it.
Yeah, Nestor, let's emphasize that point again, because we have made it a point to not endorse in a number of these races. But Bill, as Nestor indicates there, he really does feel strongly that the city needs you as comptroller. I concur. So both of
1,000,000%.
And to
gentlemen, thank you so much. I appreciate that support. Am I allowed to offer a recommendation in another race?
We take
it's your time, man. You can say anything you want to say. I live here, and I have spent hours now with all of the candidates, right? I mean, and Don would tell you the genesis of all of this was a year and a half ago where I said, you know, maybe I should talk more about what's going on around here, because the 35 minutes we've spent with you, to your point, we all need to know more about what's going on when I can't sell my condo, I can't go out of the house, businesses that friends of mine can't open their, you know, we have a real thing going on here, and I'm just so grateful to Don for 18 months ago opening the door. But literally, Bill, as I sit here, we have spent hours with Sheila and Jack and Brandon and Mary and Theroux and Mary Washington as well, and I know I'm forgetting somebody out there. I forgot a name. Brandon? Did I say Brandon? I literally, I'm stuck on two or three candidates to say, I want my vote to count. I know it's a close race, or at least there's a perception that it's a close race. I don't want to just vote, but I think two or three of these people might be able to do the job. I'm not clearly in love with any of the candidates, which really should speak something. Like, it's not a choice where I'm like, wow, there's three really awesome, incredible candidates. I think everything is a little bit of a box of chocolates and an unknown on the other end of COVID with all of these names. And I think it's a struggle for every citizen, because I don't think everybody has necessarily a favorite. And I think the polls say 25% of the people haven't decided yet, right? Literally, right?
It could be more. The 20, I think they quoted 22. But
I'm that guy. If they called me and said, what do you think? I'd say, I don't know.
But Bill, you wanted to speak on behalf of another candidate, and we certainly want to give you a chance
sure.
to do that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I have made the conscious decision that I'm not going to endorse in the mayor's race. I think I talked about this last time, that the comptroller is supposed to be the financial watchdog, and the main person that they have to watch is the mayor. And I didn't want anyone to feel like if we elected the person that I was supporting, that I wouldn't be as vigilant and, you know, as careful in my watching over that person. But when it comes to the council president's position, that was actually how I really got into city government. Is before I was on the council, I worked in the council president's office for 6 years under two different presidents, legislative aide under Mary Pat, and then chief of staff under Lawrence Bell. I know that office. I know that job. And I can tell you, of all the candidates, Shannon Sneed would actually be the person who would be the best one to lead the council through the next 4 years, which, as we talked about, are not going to be easy years. She has the judgment, and she has, and this is what's really important to me, she has the independence. It does not matter who we elect as mayor. I expect that Shannon would be able to stand up to them and, when needed, rally the council to do what is right for the people of Baltimore. And that's something that you can't dismiss or marginalize. You need somebody who can lead the council with some real independence. And I think Shannon Sneed is the person who could do that the best.
Well, we appreciate that. We had a terrific discussion with Shannon. We had a terrific discussion with Carl Stokes, and we had a standing invite out there for Nick Mosby. Again, really, really important election, June the 2nd. Ballots are in the mailboxes. Folks, Nestor, as you wrap us up, what do we say over and over again? Democracy is not
a spectator sport, which is why I got my pen and I'm filling out forms and standing in line. I'm not standing in line. Just fill it out, and there is no line to stand in. Just sign it. Make sure you sign it. Make sure you mail it in. Make sure you get it in by Tuesday, and it will save you a trip out to vote. Bill, I'm delighted to endorse you and learn from you, and also interested to hear. And I guess the reason we pointed out here, and I know Don and I have gone back and forth about not endorsing candidates is that it really does say something when you endorse someone or for in anyone to endorse anything, because we don't just all give endorsements to everything, because as Art Modell once said, they'll never believe a word you say, you know, if you endorse everything, right? So the policy of truth is where I'll leave you with that, and I appreciate your visit here, Bill. Thank you very much for and good luck to you, okay? Good luck, and I know it takes a lot of courage to jump in the way you have over the last couple decades, and I hope you do well in the election.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I look forward to coming back on the show to maybe help you debrief after we figure out how this all ended.
We can't wait. Best wishes.
I'll be eating the Taharka ice cream when he comes back. Bill Henry from the 4th District running for controller. It sounds like comptroller, but it's controller. And he's running against Joan Pratt, and I have my ballot out. Get your ballots in. Do the right thing. Vote. Let's fix the city together. Let's heal the city together. Let's come out of this thing better than ever. Let's fix crime. Let's heal the city. Let's bring some people together. I appreciate Don Mohler and bringing the people of Baltimore Positive together. You're going to hear from Dan Rodericks, Michael Lesker later in the week. We have candidate upon candidate, Shannon Snead, as well as Carl Stokes. You can find those in the repository at Baltimore Positive, as well as in the buyatoyota.com audio vault at WNST.net. Get some crab cakes from Fadley's and make sure you don't go to sleep on that mac and cheese as well. You got to get some mac and cheese when you're down there, Don Mohler, as well as State Fair, where I've been lining up for the wings. I know I want the fried chicken. What I want to do is go over there and, like, carry out a waffle and just eat it in the car without getting, like, syrup all over the place, because I want to eat it fresh. And as I keep saying to my wife, we're not going to make any breakfast. We're going to go over to State Fair, and I'm going to get chicken and waffles the way my creator wants me to be happy during the COVID, even if I'm eating in the car with the top open. I'll let her, I'll drive, and maybe she can drink the orange. Well, she can't drink the orange crush in the car. What are we going to do with the orange crush? Can we sit out in the park? Mueller can recommend a park in Catonsville. Let's go, because we're not going over for the 4th of July. All right, everyone, we're all in it together. Make sure you don't forget Mueller and Gary Realty, as well as our friends at Taharka, and vote, vote, vote. I am Nestor. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler, we are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Keep it calm, staying local, and always Baltimore Positive during the election season.